So this interview is for Owl and Bear, and I'm just going to ask you guys a few questions.
Okay. All right.
Can we start a little bit, talk about the new album?
Yeah,
sure. You recorded in both Oregon and in Los Angeles, so what was that timeline like from when you started writing and recording for the album and putting it out there?
Well, we started writing songs together as a band when we were on tour prior to that to Ownerless, when we were out touring on Approach. So we had a batch of songs that we had been playing on the road, and then we had like, you know, between the band, we had a bunch of material that we were sort of showing each other and kicking around. So we decided to go work with our friend Richard Swift, just because we trusted him, and he was like on the same page as us in every way, and it felt safe for us to kind of go there and explore maybe a different direction. So we took a lot of fragments to him and also some completed songs, but it was really kind of an experiment that turned into more time than we had actually planned, just because it was such a good experience, and he's a great hang and a great creative collaborator. So timeline, to answer the question, like, we did that, and then we came home and we did some more touring, and that's when you saw us, where we did this residency. And it was kind of all kind of mixed in, with us recording and figuring out songs. We were trying them out while we were touring, and because we had done like two other records where we had written everything and gone into the studio and done it all at the same time, and the songs didn't really have any real life. Mm-hmm. They were just born, and they were not fully realized. Mm-hmm. Or cooked or stewed. So we treated that time as like a litmus test of sort of like, what do we like playing? What feels good? What are we going to feel good about to have on a record? And what are our standards? And we were just sort of figuring out what we wanted to sound like. And there's no better way to do that than to actually do it in front of a crowd and figure it out live, you know, put it together, figure it out. What do? What do you sound like? What's your engine? Where are you coming from? So all that stuff helped a lot and guided us, and then we went back and we worked a little more with Richard, and then we went and worked with our friend Rob Schnapp and redid some of the songs that presented themselves to us as songs that we needed to work harder on and try to get capture a different recording of. And we spent, you know, a lot of time on that record, on Ownerless. We spent a lot of time, and you know, people took turns playing different guitar parts and drum parts, and you know, it was sort of a groundbreaking thing for Everest to find out the core of the band, what our sound is, what we're trying to do. And we had a really good pair of producer friends in that role who could kind of steer us in the direction we needed to go in, which we had never had in the past. You know, it was close to that, but it wasn't really exactly what we needed. So that was it. It was, you know, it started out in the nucleus. It started out as just us bringing songs to the table like every other band or whatever. Like, you bring songs in and then you pull your resources and you figure out what sounds good and what doesn't, and then you decide who you want to work with, who's going to make that finite product record under the cloud of permanence, you know, like, this is forever. Like, find those people that are going to help you, you know, get to the end goal in the way that you want it to be, and that's what happened.
And you mentioned that when you were doing the residency and you were trying it out in front of a live audience to see how that felt, and does the audience reaction somehow factor into how the song gets performed the next time or finally created, like whether they take to it, you know, quickly or...
Well, sure, I mean, yeah. You know...
It's a nice validation if the crowd really likes something that we're doing, but I think we're still mainly trying to satisfy our own personal barometer of what is good and what isn't. And usually the live version of a song and how good it is more has to do with how much we're connected with the song and if it's in a good place. So I think we're all, you know, capable of gleaning what we can from the live experience, but it only tells us so much.
I think it's less of, like what Joel's saying, to add to that, I think it's less of a reaction, like, of telling you what's good, and more of, like, creating something that you think on your level is good, and the reaction is secondary. Yeah. It's not like, I want to create something that gets a reaction.
Right.
Then the reaction is first and foremost, and it's the most important thing. And and then you're just being a fucking puppet. You're going, this is
right.
This is how I operate. I'm operating for an audience whom I don't even think we understand or know. And so I think it's more of like, we're doing this till our heart's content. And if people react to that, bless their hearts, and that's awesome.
And if they don't, then,
you know, it's not really... It's not really shaping, okay, well, we got to go back and make sure that people scream after every song. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You know?
No. If the five of us can agree on something, then that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty deep five-part test.
Yeah.
So...
I know that you guys mentioned in other interviews that I've been watching and reading up that it was really liberating for you to be away from, initially, I guess, out of Warner Brothers, you know, the record deal, or maybe you weren't really, when you made Ownerless, you didn't have a lot of marketing people, like, hounding you, etc.
Well, honestly, there was no one telling us what to do. I don't think that we've always tried to operate that way as much as possible. And in all fairness to Warner Brothers Records, they didn't tell us what to do at all on approach.
Okay.
They liked the record as it was and accepted it as it was and didn't tell us to change a goddamn thing.
Good.
Which is that's you know, to their credit, awesome. But also when we were trying to get into new sonic territory for what we're working on now, like, you know, it just, you have to work with the people who understand your vision for what you're trying to do. And I think we got to a point with them where it just didn't make sense anymore for either side. So it wasn't anything that we're bitter about. We could see very clearly who they were and what they were, and they could see that of us as well. So
You mentioned On Approach, your album previous to Ownerless, and I also read that was a difficult process, making On Approach, that I think you mentioned in one interview that it almost broke up the band. There were a lot of tense moments, I guess, maybe during the record. Was there, with Ownerless, any similar feelings, or maybe feelings of just completely opposite making Ownerless? It was a completely different baby, I guess.
I think all three records have been completely different babies, and this one, in a way, to me at least, felt more natural. I think everybody was a little more calm and understanding of our process, you know? And we worked, like Russ had mentioned earlier, with two great friends that we respect greatly, in Richard and Rob, and trusted, you know, their advice, you know, can look over and give you the thumbs up or thumbs down, and you know, you value their opinion. So.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, relationships are hard, you know. They're great, and they're beautiful, and they're awesome. They're also equally challenging, and people are on you about things, and you have to be responsible, and you have to own up to behaviors, and there's no difference in a marriage between two people, or a relationship between a band where they decide to go in and make a record. You know, these things are your life. It's what you do. It's defining. It's passionate.
Yeah.
And when you mix in different personalities, like, it's fucking inevitable that it's going to be at sometimes a disaster, at sometimes horrible, at sometimes beautiful. There's going to be tears, there's going to be hugs, there's going to be smiles, there's going to be high fives, there's going to be all these things, and it's totally normal.
Yeah.
And I think every time you ask a band that question, it's going to be similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I think it's standard fare. And when you're talking about a work of art that requires more than one soul, uh-huh, one person, that there's going to be some controversy and there's going to be some shit that goes down. But in the end, hopefully you can grab onto those things and make the best of it and challenge each other and, you know, so have this new barometer in your life that's not just yourself. It's people that you care about and trust that are going, I'm putting you to your feet to the fire,
right,
because I care about you and I know that you can do it. And that's going to happen on every record with every band. It's no different. And I think, like, to add to what he said, it's like the difference between On Approach and this record is that we had more time together and we had understood one another more clearly, and had a little bit more perspective on each other's personalities and what was going to set people off in a bad direction and a positive direction. And that's healthy, and that's, you know, that's, I think that's honestly, like, in my opinion, what any band that's gone through, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 records goes through. And, you know, it's like you could ask somebody tomorrow in a different band, like, the same question, and they're going to tell you something similar, you
yeah.
know, like, there's going to be issues that
yeah.
arise, there's going to be, but it's like, it's all based on a love for the same thing, to create something that is, you know, we all have this desire when we wake up, before we go to sleep, every day, to do something that we love, that we're proud of.
Good.
Every record's gonna be that.
Yeah.
You could ask that the same question to me the next record. Like, so what was different between Odalisque
right.
and said record?
Right.
It's gonna be the same. It's just that we've had more time together
yeah.
and more experience, and there's different batch of songs.
Sure.
And, you know, we
yeah.
recorded it in a different room.
Yeah.
Like, we're still the same guys doing the same thing. It's just very honest, you
yeah.
know?
Sounds good. Actually, speaking of things that you love, one of my favorite songs on the album is Hologram. I think it's just a nice, unexpected song in the middle of all that wonderful rock and energy that you have in the album. But in one of the lyrics that you write, the lyric is, I drive my car to the sea. And I love that lyric. I'm originally from Los Angeles. And so I asked myself, I wonder what ocean or what sea or what beach do they find themselves most often in, since you guys live in Los Angeles. Are you more Venice guys, Malibu, Manhattan Beach, none of those?
I always just go straight out to Santa Monica.
Okay.
You know, and walk out there. Like, I think everybody's got a different, like, Joel's.
Yeah, I like the Topanga, Malibu area, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of that beach is
yeah.
a lot more open and
yeah.
Less people there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good surf.
Yeah.
But
do you surf?
Yeah. And there's great surf in Manhattan Beach
yeah.
too. I like the beaches of Los Angeles, so I visit many of them, I would say.
Sounds good. Well, I am originally from Los Angeles, and I miss it. I've been here now in San Diego for 11 years, but I miss Los Angeles a lot. Do you love living in Los Angeles? Would you ever move down to San Diego? No.
I love Los Angeles for a lot of reasons. I've been there for... I'm a transplant. I didn't grow up there. But I've been there since 2001, and I've found a real community there. Of friends, and I feel like it's my home. Like, more importantly than the locale or the weather or anything, that's kind of what makes it for me.
Yeah, not the traffic.
Well, fuck the traffic. That's horrible, you know, and we all have to plan around that, and that sucks, and that isn't a... anything anybody enjoys, and it's inevitable, but I think that LA offers some serenity if you just pull your head out of all that chaos. It's beautiful, and it smells good, and the weather's great, and I do think that songwriters and musicians are affected by their geography and how, you know, where you live determines a little bit, obviously, how you write, how you feel. And I feel good there, and I feel at home there. And we travel a lot, and we're in a lot of different places, and some feel better than others, but whenever I go home to LA, it feels good. It
feels good.
And it feels energetic, and it feels like our home. It's where our band formed. There's a lot of good memories there, and you know, honestly, I can't think of many better places to be in the world.
Yeah.
You just have to kind of X out some of the negatives and not think about that shit, not let it affect you.
Yeah.
But as a whole, I think it's beautiful, and I love it, and I defend it against any East Coaster who says it's, you know, not a good place to live. I think they're wrong.
And I actually defend it to everybody in San Diego who says that it's a hellhole, and I defend it because I love Los Angeles too.
And San Diego's a great place too. We've spent a lot of time in Southern California, and it's kind of one, you know, it is one certain type of mindset in the whole area. So we've connected with San Diego a lot too. So.
Now, you mentioned traveling. You've been traveling a lot. I know you're about to start off with Neil Young again, I think, in the next couple weeks or so. Where do you guys get the energy? I've seen you play only twice before. Where do you guys get the energy that you do have on stage? And it's an incredible amount of energy, like night after night or show after show. Do you guys ever just, you know, want to sleep in, you know, for the show? It's an amazing amount of energy that you put out there.
That's a good question. I've never been asked that question.
It just happens.
Yeah. I don't think there's any... I don't know if it... I think that it's the happiest moment we all have in our day. That honestly, you know.
So you love performing live?
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole point. You go... You drive... You schlep it out on the road, you work hard. That time on the stage is fucking thrilling. You know, it's a chance for you to get all of your, you know, because like we sit in a van all day, like waiting for that moment. And then we get there and we wait for like 3 hours to get to do it. So when you get up there, it's kind of like, you know, bam, like you're unleashing the horse. You're like, you're taking the bridle off. You're letting the engine, you're going 120 miles per hour. And that's the best feeling. That's why we do it. And so I think that's where it comes from. It's not like, I need a fucking monster drink before I do this. Like, you know, and we're not exactly like old men. So, you know, it's just... That's why we do it. That's the thing. It's the energy. It's what you feel. It keeps us young. It really does.
Perfect. Sounds good. Now, you guys have played with a lot of different people. Neil Young, Death Cab for Cutie, Wilco. And so you've been abroad, and you've played small stages like the Casbah, where I saw you last. What are some of your favorite venues to play at? Big venues, intimate venues, special cities, perhaps?
It more has to do with the connection with the crowd each night than what the venue is. I mean, we have some of our best shows in the smallest, strangest situations. So, and we've also had, you know, the chance to play in some very large rooms that also, you know, have kind of a legendary stature that you log somewhere in the back of your memory banks. And it's special too, for sure. But it's more about our connection with each other and the music that we're playing and feeling like we're in the moment. So intimacy is an important thing So it's nice to feel a connection with the crowd wherever you are.
Yeah. It's good. I love seeing you guys at the Casbah. It's such a small place, and I was right there, like, in your, within 4 inches of you. So, well, that's great. Let's see. Out of all those people that you've toured with, or other people that you admire, the people that you're listening to, who might you cover a song? Like, you know, you play your set tonight, 10 songs, 12 songs, and an unexpected cover. Would you ever cover anybody's song? Anybody's music?
We have.
You have, okay.
We've covered Neil. We've covered bandmates of Neil, Danny Whitten. We've covered Bob Dylan. We've covered AC/DC, we've covered Led Zeppelin, we've covered The Who. I think honestly too, there's a lot of stuff that isn't on that level that we would consider playing. Because we all listen to a really varied, wide spectrum of music. But we are within our limits, and like, I think we can't ever do, like, the honest answer is we couldn't ever cover anything we didn't believe in, or we didn't love, or we didn't think was really awesome. And there's so much that we feel that way about, that it's daunting, and
we actually don't do a lot of covers.
We don't, you know, and I think it's also because, like, we work so hard on our own stuff, trying to, like, pull out of ourselves, like, original stuff. But yeah, we've covered Neil, and we've covered songs, and it's always fun, but it's always kind of a sideline for us. It's not something that we focus on.
So actually, this leads me nicely into my next question. This is something that I do with all the bands that I interview. I name off like 10 or 15 random artists, musicians, and the band usually votes like, yes, we like them, or no, we don't like them. So would you be willing to do that?
All right.
Okay. And I don't say like, oh, Russell hates The Who, but Joel loves The Who. So I won't out yet. I'll just say like, majority rules. Okay, this is called majority rules game. Okay, so the first one, Mumford & Sons. And you can just vote by, like, thumbs up or thumbs down.
I don't know them enough to vote thumbs up or thumbs down.
Okay.
I don't either. I really like what those guys are about, and what they're doing is, I think, a lot more genuine than a lot of the music.
I would say thumbs up.
Thumbs up for just trying a new...
Well, and you know, they invited us to play a festival once, and I feel like...
I think they're doing good.
I feel like they're
music community.
Good folks, and I don't know that much about them, and I don't know, it's hard. I don't really want to judge other people's music.
So we won't play the game.
Let's go ahead and play the game.
Okay.
We can play the game.
Okay.
And why don't we just do this? Just assume that we're going to say we love them.
Okay.
So let's go.
All right. Paul Simon.
Love him.
Okay. Led Zeppelin.
Love him.
Soundgarden.
Love him.
Yeah.
Stevie Wonder.
Love him.
See, did you hear that? Love him, he said. Kiss.
Love him.
I'm not a huge fan. I liked Kiss as a kid.
Not really, no. Don't really love him. That's okay, you can say no.
For me, but
okay.
I appreciate them, but it's not my cup of tea.
Okay, yeah. Same here. Florence and the Machine.
Don't know him. Neutral.
Neutral, okay. Devo.
Fucking love him.
Okay. And that was a vigorous head shake from Joel.
Of course, Devo, groundbreaking artists. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna get run over by a car.
Utmost respect for Devo.
Okay. And remember, these are random. They're gonna get a little random as I go down. The Go-Go's.
No.
Okay.
Not for me.
No.
Yeah, not my jams.
Okay. Snoop Dogg.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. The Smiths.
Yes.
There was a time in my life I loved the Smiths, but not my favorite band anymore.
Oasis.
Yes.
Yes.
Gorillaz.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last one, The Shins.
Yes.
But of course.
Okay, but of course he says. Okay, and then my last official question, what should I be listening to after I name these 10, 12 people? What do you recommend, Russell?
I would say that there was a time... And this is just, I'll keep it short. but I'm sort of appalled by current dance trends. The whole like oot, 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 oot. So
you guys know that Gangnam Style thing, right? That my kids are driving me crazy about.
Yeah. I don't.
I already pasted it.
I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't judge. I don't hate. I just don't like it. And I listened to a record today by Ardy Shaw. It's called the Sound of Dance from 51. And it's like just beautiful arrangements with the whole orchestra. And you can imagine like people dressed up, dancing, having a cocktail. It's like this other era that's just lost. And I put this record on and it's like this beautiful, perfect piece of wax from 51, from Columbia, Six Eye, beautiful record. Put it on, bam, this gorgeous sound comes out of it. I would say, seek out some of that stuff.
Okay.
Just because, like, a lot of people are gonna tell you, like, listen to the new Florence and Machine, yeah, or listen to the, my head isn't there.
Because Artie Shaw's big band, know, right?
Is yeah, it big band? Yeah, it's all okay, big yeah, band stuff, but like, it's all different.
Okay.
You know, there's some stuff that's like super fucking hyper.
Yeah.
This is more like smooth, like flowing. It's like, it's a transition from like Glenn Miller into like the John Coltrane era and all that shit that
perfect
was like, it's like a transition from like, you know, mainly white orchestras,
yeah,
into like soulful, okay, jazz. But it's just easy to listen to. It puts you in a good mood. And I feel like that's really meaningful.
Okay.
You know, it's like, if you're in a bad mood, find that shit, put it on, and you're like, you're cooking breakfast, you're feeling good. It's just easy.
Sounds good.
And then you start getting into like, you know, what that era was about,
sure,
and how they did it, and you realize, wow, this shit was really,
yeah,
intense. Like, these guys were the rock stars of that time.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they were the ones that were, like, backstage,
sure,
like, doing drugs and drinking and fucking going out and blowing people's minds and smoking cigarettes in between songs,
yeah,
and, like, dames and broads and, like, the whole, that whole thing, it blows my mind. It's awesome. And it's lost.
Yeah. No, but it's, like, it can't be lost. It won't be lost. Hopefully.
But, like, that's the thing. I don't recommend, like, new indie music. I
right,
just don't. Because I don't hate on it, but I just don't connect to it.
No, I think that's great. I just interviewed a band that's really into Brazilian music from like the 1970s, and so they recommended some stuff from then.
Yeah, there
but
you go.
Perfect.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great stuff from that. We need to load on stage.
Yes, absolutely. Joel, any recommendations for me?
I've been listening to a lot of Ornette Coleman.
Okay. Oh, beautiful.
And Jimi Hendrix, Band of Gypsies.
Guys, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.